go on to hear Dunboyo versus the county board of city of Denver. Excuse me, before you start, you have an exhibit that you wanted to use?
Possibly, Your Honor, which depends on the nature of the question.
Well, I just wanted to give you the chance to get it set up. All right. Okay, please.
And with the court of counsel, Robert Fishman on behalf of the petitioner, Boubacar Doumbouya. There are three basic issues before the court in this case. Number one, whether we properly sought certiorari review in this case. Number two, if not, whether this court should exercise its original jurisdiction under Rule 21 to review the merits of the case. And number three, the merits of the case, whether retrying the petitioner would violate his right against double jeopardy. The first issue, cert review, I have nothing to add to the argument beyond what we set forth in our reply brief. So barring any questions from the court on that issue, I will move on to the second. This court's exercise of original jurisdiction is appropriate in cases where there is no other adequate remedy. Double jeopardy prohibits not only being punished twice for the same offense, but also being put on trial twice for the same offense. And in light of that fact, this court has repeatedly exercised its original jurisdiction under Rule 21 to review double jeopardy claims in order to avoid a defendant being forced to go to trial in violation of his constitutional rights. That's the holding of Segovia from this court, most recently in 2008. Same holding in Paul versus People, 2005. Same holding in the Barrett case, 2000. It is the same holding that we urge to be applied in this case. Not only because this is a double jeopardy claim, and the very fact of going to trial is something that you can't undo in a direct appeal following a final judgment in the event of a conviction, but also just for practical reasons. We're all here. The case has been fully briefed on the merits. The court has examined the merits of the case. It's ready for adjudication. And so as a practical matter, I think the court should exercise its discretion under Rule 21. In all of these respects, this case is postured essentially identically to Paul versus People, where a double jeopardy claim came before this court improperly on cert review, and the court said, look, it shouldn't have come up here this way, but we have the discretion and the authority to rule under Rule 21, and we're going to do it for two reasons. One, the case is in front of us, and two, if we don't, the defendant is going to be forced to endure a trial that's going to violate his constitutional rights. I think the identical analysis applies here. Which brings us to the merits of the case and the question of whether a single question bearing on the possibility that the petitioner would be deported in the event of conviction created the, quote, manifest necessity for declaring a mistrial, when that question went not only to the heart of the petitioner's defense, but directly to the complaining witness's motive for fabricating the allegations. A little context to the question, my client and the complaining witness, Ms. Lundquist, are embroiled in a very contentious custody dispute involving their young son. It is my client's contention, and it is the basis, the defense in the case, that Ms. Lundquist will do anything to obtain custody of her son, including fabricating allegations of criminal conduct. Okay. So what's the motive? The motive for, how does deportation play into that? It is her motive. She thinks that by fabricating the allegations, my client will be deported. She wins. Child is hers. It's just the classic example of motive and prejudice of an adverse witness.
Counsel, I understand your position is that by asking that question, you didn't really raise this whole sub-issue of whether he would or would not have in fact been deported, because rather, what you were just wanting to figure out was what was in the mother, let me just call her the mother's mind. But what evidence do you have that she even had a reasonable belief that he would be deported? Without going into that kind of an issue as to what her knowledge was of immigration law.
Two points. You're right. The argument is not whether it's true or not. It's her belief. And there is a good faith basis for trial counsel to conclude that the complaining witness believes that he will be deported. Is there...
That she believed that he would be deported.
Right.
What is that good faith basis?
I'll be honest, it's not in the record. You can pour through the... It's a short...
Right,
record.
Right.
You can pour through it.
That's why I'm asking a question.
It's not in there, but that is because the trial court accepted the city's argument that this line of questioning is completely off limits. There's no objection as to lack of foundation. There's no requirement or request for an offer of proof. Everybody, the city and the court say, we're not going there, period. There never is a need to make an offer of proof on this, because the judge isn't saying, gee, Ms. Bagley, do you have a good faith basis to go there? Or let's have a bench conference and see where this is going to go and see if you're really going to be able to substantiate it. The court says, deportation, hot button issue, mistrial, case is over. Okay, so there is no evidence to support it other, and I can only represent to you that there was a good faith basis for asking the question. The absence of record evidence to support my representation to you is not there, but that's a function of the trial court's ruling. It's not a failure of proof on our part. And again, I mean, I have to emphasize, the objection was not lack of foundation. It was never really articulated. This is a criminal case, highly prejudicial, mistrial. That's the objection.
May I ask you one question, just
sure,
to follow up on that? If are you arguing that it would always be error, that there would never be manifest necessity for a court to grant a mistrial in a situation like this, or simply that he abused his discretion in finding it was so prejudicial in this case?
Well, I never say never. So that's not my position, I'm not urging the court to adopt a hard and fast rule. In every single case where a question of deportation comes up, it must be permitted, and if the mistrial, that's not the rule I would advocate, and I would be surprised if the court were to adopt it. The standard of review on manifest necessity determinations is the totality of the circumstances based on the case at hand. In the case at hand, frankly, I don't think you can have a better record of how the subject of deportation relates to the star witness's motive and bias. So I can imagine cases where maybe a favorable ruling to my client in this case might not lead to the same result in another case. But on the continuum of those sorts of manifest necessity determinations, we're way up at
the... Let me ask a question that kind of follows up on mine, and I think also Justice Coates's. So if your argument maybe is just simply that the trial judge jumped the gun without determining whether there was a good faith basis for this evidence, and had you been allowed to present your good faith evidence, then the deportation evidence would have been appropriate. That's your argument, right?
Yes and no. The last third of your question, absolutely. The evidence was central, and it was... my client was constitutionally entitled under the Sixth Amendment to present it. I mean, he's allowed to confront the witnesses against him and expose their motive and bias. That's exactly what this evidence would have gone to. The two preceding components of your question, did the court jump the gun? Yes or no? I mean, I think he could have been a little bit more deliberative and taken a step back and said, let's really think about this and pour through it. The truth is, he wasn't jumping over a legal issue that the city's objection called for him to make. Because again, the objection was not lack of foundation. The objection was, this is prejudicial. It's outrageous. Mistrial. If the city would have said, Judge, I don't know where this is coming from. I don't think there's a lack of foundation, and I don't think there's a good faith basis to be going there. Certainly then the judge would have said, well, come on up and
well, let's hear well, I guess maybe we've gotten back to where I wanted to go with my question, which is that if that had happened and it turns out there's no good faith basis, that the question was really just, you know, interjecting into the trial an issue that could be very prejudicial, that is deportation, then it would make sense, wouldn't it, to have granted a mistrial? Because, I mean, that is very, the least has quite a lot of potential to color a juror's perspective about the equities of the case. Here you have a misdemeanor charge versus deportation.
Yeah,
so that could really be quite appropriately the ground for a mistrial. On the other hand, if you had a very clear record about how the mother had talked with people saying, for example, she wanted to get this guy deported, something like that, that would make the evidence quite relevant. And you know, the prejudice weighed against the perhaps inflammatory nature of deportation would be much less. We don't have any way to make that kind of calculus here.
Either way.
Now,
your observation holds true in both respects. There is no way to say, gee, this could just be a smear campaign, absolutely no factual basis to support it under those circumstances. Wouldn't it be reasonable to declare a mistrial? I'll say maybe.
Okay, so but we've already agreed there's no factual basis.
Right.
So in the absence of a factual basis, what does that mean about the declaration of the mistrial? How can we even figure that out?
Well, I think that you say we closely scrutinize the record and the totality of the circumstances and to see if there was a manifest necessity for doing this. Okay, so if there was a record that told you no evidence whatsoever, it's a below the belt shot, you could say, well, gee, looks like manifest necessity.
But I guess what I want you to focus on is the absence of a record. So what does our opinion say?
Well, right, I think a different analysis applies when you talk about the absence of evidence to support a finding of manifest necessity, which is what we're dealing with here. I mean, the question for this court is there evidence in the record for us to conclude under the totality of the circumstances that there was no way that there could have been a fair trial because, as Justice Rice appropriately points out, there could be cases where somebody asks this question with absolutely no factual basis. Is this the case? We don't know. You have no basis for saying.
Mr. Fishman, let me ask you this. You have to have a good faith basis to ask the question.
Well, sure. Ms. Bradley is an officer of the court, so I think it's safe for the court to assume this was not a smear campaign.
Is it correct that you have to have a good faith basis to ask the question whether the witness knew of the risk of deportation?
Yes, I think that it is.
Okay, but do you have to show that you have a good faith basis before you ask the question? Is there some requirement that you make that showing before you go there?
There's not any requirement that I'm aware of, and there's no requirement that any court or the city has ever pointed to in support of such a case.
And was the absence, or was there any question raised as to whether there was a good faith basis for the question in the trial court?
None whatsoever. Again, the objection was not lack of foundation. If it was, we would have the answer to your question. It wasn't, and so we're arguing about the validity of an objection that was never made and is not part of this case.
So you think the record stands that we can just assume a good faith basis for the mother's belief?
Right, and if you look at the lead case, it's I believe the primary case we discuss in support of the proposition that deportation evidence goes to motive and bias and you're entitled to introduce evidence on this. You'll see the court's ruling there is specifically qualified. This is highly relevant, probative, and provided, in that case it's a prosecutor asking the question, and provided the prosecutor has a good faith basis, you go there. It's relevant, it's highly probative. So I think you assume, in the complete absence of any reason to suspect the absence of good faith basis, that there was a good faith basis for the question. The trial court certainly didn't make its manifest necessity ruling based upon the absence of a good faith basis.
May I ask very quickly,
sure.
Is your argument that there was no manifest necessity dependent on a determination by us that the judge erroneously excluded this question? Or are you arguing that even if he appropriately made a ruling as a matter of evidence, and this shouldn't have come in, that nevertheless that didn't amount to manifest necessity for a new trial?
I don't follow. I mean, the problem is we were entitled to delve into the subject of deportation, and the complaining witnesses believe.
So you're saying this was admissible evidence? He should not have disallowed the question.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'll reserve the last 45 seconds if I may.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors. Melissa Drazen Smith on behalf of the people in the city of Denver, 23161. And if it please the court and counsel, this court has on occasion used its original jurisdiction power to hear cases that are not properly before it, but I submit that this is not one of those cases. This is not a broad constitutional question. This is not a case that can offer guidance to any of the lower courts by this court's ruling. This case was a very, very poorly thought out, ill-advised, irresponsible question asked by defense counsel at trial. I find it a little shocking that Mr. Fishman has been saying that this was the heart of the case and it went to the motive of the victim. Because if it were the heart of the case and going to the motive of the victim, it would have been a question that actually approached those issues. The question itself was, you know he'll be deported if he's convicted in this case. That is ostensibly the same thing as saying, you know, he's going to be a sex offender if he's convicted in this case. You know he's going to jail if he's convicted in this case.
Ms. Jason Smith, the distinction you're making is between did you know that he's going to be deported versus did you believe that he's going to be deported?
I believe that's a very important distinction.
Well, I understand it's a very important distinction for purposes of trying to understand what's admissible and what is not and what the relevancy is. But is that really such an odd way to ask a witness about belief? I mean, it seems to me that in the trial court, questions are always asked to the witness about what they believe to be true, which is really all they can testify to, and are frequently done in that sort of terminology. Isn't it true that... And oftentimes it's not really a question of whether it's true, it's a question of what the witness thinks is true.
No, it's not common that that's the way the way the questions are asked. The questions are asked, isn't it true that what you want to have happen is to have him deported? What the question was, it was so ill-conceived, the question actually just put in front of the jury that this is a fait accompli. This is what's going to happen. And as the judge said in the counsel...
Was the objection then made? Well, the objection wasn't made, however, that you're arguing now, was it? The objection wasn't made, this is improperly bringing in the fact of deportation as opposed to the belief. I mean, we didn't go there with the objection, did we?
That was the objection. And that was what the court found. And the court, who was sitting there, who heard the evidence, who saw the effect that it had on the jury... His reaction to this, the county court judge, was to be outraged and say, wait a second, you know, the genie is out of the bottle. We can never put this genie back in the bottle because you've just made this jury think that like magic, he's going to be lifted out of his chair and transported to Africa never to be seen again. And that's what this question did. So this is not, certainly Mr. Fishman has brought up a more interesting question for the court to determine, which is whether it would ever be appropriate to impeach credibility by throwing in the prospect of deportation. But that's not the question that was presented here. The question presented here was clearly improper. And so then what the court had to determine was, did that question so prejudice the fairness of the proceeding that it was manifest necessity to have a mistrial?
So the question exactly reads, you know that if he is found guilty of this, he'll be deported?
Correct.
As a question?
Correct.
So by the you know part, it is suggesting that is it your understanding or is it your belief or this is something that you know, isn't it? I mean, it's not a very good question, obviously, but...
It's a very poor question.
So I mean, this question could be really interpreted both ways.
But the trial court, who heard the question and felt the reaction in the court, certainly said that what you did, what defense counsel did at this trial, was tell the jury that this defendant was going to be lifted up and transported out if he's convicted.
Well, that was what the judge said. I mean, he was being somewhat colorful. But I mean, if we just look at the record, the question itself is very bare bones. We don't really know quite what that means.
And the importance of that, Justice Rice, is that just what the case law says about evidentiary rulings and manifest necessity. The reason that the appellate courts give so much deference to the trial court is because the trial court is actually hearing the question, hearing the tone, feeling what's happening in the courtroom. And an appellate court can never be in that same position because you're seeing words in a transcript. And so in a transcript, when you put the word "you know" in front of it, you arguably could be asking about what the witness knows.
Ms. Jason-Smith, the question preceding that is, you know that the defendant is from Africa. I suppose that goes in the same place, too. She probably didn't know that. She had a belief about that. Right?
But he was actually from Africa, and so that's a statement of fact that is correct.
Yeah, but that doesn't really matter, though, does it? Because maybe he was actually going to be deported, too, but that's really not the point, is it?
But that does matter, because the fact of what the attorney said, you know he'll be deported if he's convicted of this, is an incorrect fact.
Well, but what is relevant here concerning this altogether is her belief that he is from Africa and therefore may have a deportation issue. So whether he's in fact from Africa and whether he's in fact has a deportation issue is irrelevant. It's all a question of what her belief is.
Correct.
Is that right? Can you show me one place in the record where the court or the city attorney is making that distinction and is really, in essence, arguing what you're saying now, which is, well, maybe he could ask about her beliefs, but he can't ask about the fact of subject to deportation. Is that distinction anywhere in the short record?
The distinction is not in the record. And the reason the distinction is not in the record is because the question was so poorly crafted that it didn't get there. And because the response to the question was so prejudicial, because it is essentially the same as asking a completely false question like...
Well, there wasn't a response to the question, right? There was immediately an objection.
I meant the response in terms of what happened in the courtroom, what the jury took from that, what the court took from that.
I'm sorry.
So it would be the same as saying, you know, he's going to be a sex offender if he's convicted here. It's false. It's a false statement. It doesn't matter whether she believes it or not. It has inserted so much prejudice by having the jury start to think about this issue and to be concerned that when they are deciding this case, they're actually deciding whether or not this man is going to be deported, never to be seen again. And so what the court was deciding on was, well, holy cow, look what you've done here. You have inserted so much prejudice in here. I can't even consider what would happen if you tried to make this question relevant, because you've already put that prospect into the jury's mind. And I can't make that bet.
Here's what concerns me. It seems to me that the city may have overreacted to this, and there's some kind of notion here that notice, the defense needed to give you some kind of notice that this was going to be an issue. It seems to me that it is a poor question. It could have been objected to as improper, lack of foundation, and so on. But the immediate reaction of the city is, we can't deal with this. Now, why can't the city deal with, in this type of case, the fact that it may come into evidence in defense in a criminal case? Based on an acrimonious relationship involving a primary witness.
Had the question been properly asked, Your Honor, about what she knew and what was motivating her, then the prosecution can deal with that. But this setting out that this defendant, this criminal defendant, will be deported opens up the door to all of these questions about what is the due process that somebody is offered when there is a collateral federal suit that's going on. What are the chances that he's going to be deported? What other things are going to be considered? And so that would require the bringing in of more evidence and potentially expert witnesses. This is a municipal court case, a one-day trial. There's no possibility of having that kind of evidence as you're sitting there at the table trying to deal with a question. So the more interesting question would have been if this question had been asked correctly, and the question had been, ma'am, you're doing this because you want him to be deported, because you want him out of the picture so you can get these kids. That would have been a more interesting question for this court, and it would have been a question that, had this court had it before it, could have offered good and valuable guidance for lower courts. But that wasn't the question, and that's what concerns me and has.
Well, but mistrial is a very severe kind of impact, is it not? I mean.
Yes, it is. But the defendant is the one who inserted the prejudice by having this ill-thought-out question. I find it hard to believe that this was the center case of her defense and that she could be so careless in asking this question in a way that inserted so much prejudice into the process. So in terms of this court's judgment, when this court is reviewing, this court needs to give deference to the trial court, because under both considerations, whether or not the question was improper, which is the first question, it is an abuse of discretion standard that this court has to impose. And what that means is that you don't get to decide that you might have done something differently had you been on the trial court, but rather, did this court abuse its discretion when it found that the question was improper? And then similarly, for manifest necessity, this court has to determine not whether there could have been some other kind of palliative efforts made by the court, but rather that court abused its discretion, that it did not do the right thing in determining that there was so much prejudice that there was manifest necessity. The strength of the trial court's reaction when this question was asked, I think, is very good evidence that the question itself made people, it was shocking. It was not about the witness. It was not about what the witness knew. It was an attempt to appeal to the prejudice and the bias of the jury. And that's exactly what it did. And that's why.
Well, now, part of your point here would be on a retrial that they would have an opportunity to fairly advance this theory that was her motivation. But then we run up against the constitutional protection against double jeopardy. So would you address that point?
The double jeopardy?
Right.
There is no double jeopardy issue, Your Honor, if there was manifest necessity for the mistrial. So one thing follows from the other. If the court has found that the question was improper and that the court acted properly in finding so, and then secondly, that the court made the decision for manifest necessity using the proper judgment, then there is no double jeopardy issue.
May I ask the question with regard to your second question? Do you think the defendant, on oral argument here just a few minutes ago, if not earlier, has conceded that we don't need to address that second question? And the entire question here is, did the judge erroneously exclude this evidence? And there's only an absence of manifest necessity, an error in granting mistrial, if the judge actually erroneously excluded the evidence.
I think that that's in part true. I think that the law is clear that the court has the discretion to make those determinations about the question being improper. And the court has then also the discretion to declare a mistrial if the question itself was improper. So yes, I believe that that's correct. I believe that he has said that he believes the question was proper and therefore the mistrial could never have been proper. Is that where you were going? I think that it's important when the court looks at this case to put it against the backdrop of how it got here. And I did do the chart, and I'm not sure that it's necessary, but this was the mistrial in the municipal court. The defendant did not have an interlocutory appeal right from municipal court. And so what he did was file an original 106 civil case in the district court. When he lost in the district court, He should have taken a direct appeal to the Court of Appeals. He did not do that. He came on a writ of cert before the Supreme Court as if he had directly appealed the municipal case to the district court.
Ms. Drazen-Smith, just a point of interest here. And in response to that petition for cert, remind me, did you file an opposition to that raising this procedural problem? Or the
we
fact
did
that,
not.
Okay.
We did not.
Well, is this a correct procedure? This 106 is a writ, and the all writs in the district court. So do you think that is a proper procedure?
To do the 106?
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But I would say that what the extraordinary writ procedure offered the defendant was a plain, speedy remedy at law for the question that he asked. And then he forewent another plain, speedy remedy at law by appealing. And so to say somehow that this defendant has been overly prejudiced by having to go to trial again because he had no plain, speedy remedy at law is just incorrect.
So you're basically just saying he should be in the Court of Appeals for this issue?
It should have been, yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
I need to make my position more clear to you, Justice Coates. The third argument in our brief is, even if the question was improper and highly prejudicial, there's no manifest necessity. That's a very high standard for declaring a mistrial. You could have given a curative instruction. You could have done other things, I think, that Justice Hobbs' question goes to. Right? And that's sort of the jumping the gun on this whole thing. You know that if he's convicted, he'll be deported. Had the prosecution said, objection as to form, the argument being made now, could have had a bench conference, and the judge should have said, well, let's try to back up. Okay, Ms. Bagley, why don't you reframe your question? Isn't it your belief that the petitioner will be deported if he's convicted? Maybe she says yes, maybe she says no. And on recross, the city gets up and says, are you an immigration lawyer? No, I'm not. Do you know anything about immigration law? No, I don't know anything. Have you consulted with anyone? Do you know that this is true? No. And I think had the record been that, it would be very difficult to conclude that the prejudice was so unbelievable that it necessitated a mistrial.
And so you didn't mean to be abandoning that argument in your response to my pretty direct question about that, I thought.
I asked you to repeat the question a second time because I didn't understand it the first time.
Okay.
And I think, particularly in light of our briefs, I didn't understand it the second time either.
Okay.
Thank you. I have more time. The question.
It's magic.
The question, you know, I mean, when I go in the hallway and tell my colleagues, I know we're going to win this case. Everybody's going to understand that as an expression of my belief. It's exactly the point Justice Merchant is that you made. Now I'll say thanks. Thank you.
I want to thank both counsel for your arguments. The case will stand submitted, and the court will be in recess until 1:30.